I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, with Halloween just hours away, we're going to talk about haunted places in the Hoosier State. We'll talk about the spots that are spooky here in Indiana and the history that makes them so. My guests will be Nicole and Michael Kobrowski of Historic Indiana Ghost Walks. Please join the conversation. Give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, and you can tumble upon us on Twitter at WFYI. Please do join the conversation. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about historic Indiana hauntings today on No Limits, in honor, obviously, of Halloween, which is tomorrow. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Nicole and Michael Kobrowski of Historic Indiana Ghost Walks and Tours, also proprietors, owners of unseenpress.com. They're tour leaders, phenomenon investigators, and authors of several books on regional hauntings and a history of Central State Hospital. Nicole and Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you both here. So give us an overview on what are some of the haunted places in Indiana. Michael, you want to start, or Nicole? I can tell the two of you are married. You're deferring to each other here.
He's a little shy from time to time, so I like to give him the opportunity to talk. And his face is flaming red now. I think that there's a lot of hauntings. My personal belief is that it doesn't matter how old the building is or how old the place is. It's what happened there. Mm-hmm. So it could be something that happened 3 days ago. It could be something that happened 100 years ago. But people tend to think of places that are haunted that have had tragic things happen, like at Central State or other hospitals and things like that. But you can also have buildings that are full of light and laughter and hope, like the Athenaeum Foundation building, and you can still have ghosts there that are very interesting. Cemeteries are another obvious one because they're kind of a place of tragedy. Mm-hmm. You know, some people believe that spirits that are buried there are tied to there. I think they're transient and can go any place.
Well, and in terms of this, what are the places when you give tours or that you tend to focus on? Michael?
Yeah, our ghost walks are mostly in central Indiana, here in Indianapolis and Noblesville, Westfield, and Anderson. And we do focus on walkable distances, so we can go there during our walks and spend about 2 hours with history and ghost stories that we have. We like to find new stories that many people haven't heard yet, but we do throw a lot of places in that a lot of people know, like the Slippery Noodle in downtown Indianapolis is very popular, of course, with many people and has a lot of hauntings too.
Well, and, Nicole, if you could tell me real quickly, mm-hmm. When you do one of these tours, I mean, how do you choose a place where you're going to give a tour?
Well, we have to have a place that has a haunting. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there are places that we've researched. Sometimes there are places that other people in the paranormal field have researched. Sometimes they're just a really good story from people that are credible. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything is considered folklore and mainstream science anyway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it has to have the story. And then we like to have the history behind it because we think a lot of times that the history is tied to the haunting. And so we have businesses, we have not-for-profits, profits, you know, we have houses, we have, you know, our own house is haunted. Mm-hmm. If it was close enough, we'd probably put it on the tour too. But it has to have some sort of history that we can talk about, because a lot of the people that are interested in the paranormal are also interested in the history.
Can you give me an example of a ghost story here, a place maybe in Indianapolis that is haunted, that you would do a tour and then tell me the history behind it?
Yeah. Do you want to do Dr. Kanabe, Michael?
Yeah, we have the Chilling Chatham Arch Lockerbie Ghost Walk that we give, and there we go by the Barton House, which is an old apartment building that is revitalized just a few years ago by the Salvation Army. And we found a story in the newspaper articles about a murder that happened there in 1911, October 24th, 1911. And more we found out about it and really got very close to the person who was murdered there, Dr. Helene Knabe, partly because I'm from the area where she is from, and she was a woman in a man's field becoming a doctor here in 1900, and the murder was never really officially solved. So tragedies like that often cause hauntings, and we talk about it there on our ghost walk. It's one of our 6, 7, 8 stops that we have on that tour, and have experiences that people told us about in the place, in the building, while it was being renovated, while people moved in.
We had an experience there.
We had an experience there while we were...
What experience?
Sorry. When we were putting together the tour, and originally Dr. Kanabe was supposed to be part of my PhD dissertation, and it got nixed, but we were able to go through the building with the Salvation Army. And you would think in a building that size and that old and kind of, it was run down at that point, that you would get a lot of orbs, which, you know, could be refractions of light or a bug going across the lens or something like that. We got one orb out of all the pictures that we took. And then we were recording and we were trying to get her to talk with us. And when we were in her apartment or the area where her apartment was, we got an EVP, electronic voice phenomenon. We got an EVP of her saying, "It's terrible. It's horrible."
Well, and I'm going to ask, how did you get into this field of study?
Nicole dragged me into it. I always say that.
And it's a bit of a lie. But I had been very interested ever since I had my own paranormal experience when I was 13. And I thought my sisters were kidding me when they had their paranormal experiences in our house. And finally, I saw the man in the cape for myself. And from that point on, the early 70s, 80s, you didn't find books about personal experiences. They pretty much locked you up in the hospital. And so I was just trying to find some sort of clarity around it. And from that point on, I was just, you know, I'm not the only person that's had this experience. I know it. And I've just been very interested in finding out, are they real, that sort of thing. And I believe they are. There's too many people that have these experiences to write them off as some sort of psychological issue.
We are talking about historic Indiana hauntings here on No Limits, with Halloween just a few hours away. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, you'd alluded to the fact that there's skepticism, obviously, in mainstream science. I think Nicole used the term that it is folklore. And I'll be honest, I tend to be skeptical, too.
That's okay.
Well, and, you know, it's also okay for you to believe what you want. The show's called No Limits for a reason.
Absolutely.
We try not to impose it on people. How do you deal with that when you know, you're talking to someone and you can see, okay, their eyes are kind of glazing over or whatever, or they're making some sort of judgment about you?
Well, when we're on the tours, we're true believers, and we bill our tours as tours from true believers to the public. And we always kind of take a poll at the beginning and say, how many of you are, you know, totally into it, and how many of you are skeptic? And, you know, sometimes the skeptics won't even raise their hand. Mm-hmm. And we're like, you know, if you're skeptic, own it, because it's okay. We're not trying to convert you. But and then we just ask, you know, how many people are here along for the ride? So we just try to put everybody at ease.
Okay. And in terms of how you put them at ease, you know, do you have honest conversations with them about what they believe and what they don't believe?
Sure, okay. Sure. There are some people that come on our tours that are kind of like, oh, I don't know about this because they're scared, you know, or they're unsure. And then there are some people who have had experiences that are scared. And then there are other people. We've had a few people on our tours that are like, you know, I'm here for my friend, but I really think that you don't need to play with the paranormal. You need to leave it alone because in my religion, they're demons.
Oh, okay. And how do you deal with that?
We always say that everybody can have their own beliefs, and that's what we're all about, and what we believe in, that everybody can have their own thoughts about things. We just know so many stories that people told us about, experiences people had in the same space, people that don't know each other telling us the same stories about experiences, which just, that's what convinced me, really, besides having my own experiences later on. But early on, starting this in 2001, 2002, really was what convinced me. I do like my German food occasionally, so going to the Athenaeum building there and have some German food and beer is nice, and having so many people there working there telling us experiences they had, and managers, waitresses, barkeepers, was just really eye-opening, and that's kind of how we started with that ghost walk. Our first one was in Westfield, where we live, but the Athenaeum was really the second big place that we really started with our tours, and then we went up and down Mass Avenue and asked every other business, do you have any ghosts? Sometimes we got strange looks, but pretty frequently we had people who told us, yeah, we have a story, or a person works that next door has a story, and that's really what convinced me a lot that there's a lot out there.
Walk me through real quickly how you made the trip. I can see how, you know, based on your experiences, that this would be, you know, something you would want to do almost as a, you know, as a private pursuit. The idea of in a, making it a career is a different kind of conversation. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's sort of like making the decision, okay, I'm going to be a person of faith, you know, and believe this, as opposed to I'm going to become a priest or a nun or you know, a minister, a member of the clergy. It's a, you know, and I realize there are likely to be some people who might be offended by that comparison, but I guess what I'm talking about is a level of commitment there.
Yeah, if you're going to be in this business, and I just want to be clear, we give ghost walks and we give bus tours, and we work with different organizations, usually not for profits, some for profits, to do public investigations. So, you know, we lead people through, or we volunteer our time for that, and then whatever organization we're working with gets the money. So, you know, we help with that. But you have to buy into it, and you have to be committed to it. It's like any other business. You have to look at it as a job. Yeah, it's fun. It's really fun. But there are days when, you know, it's Halloween season and we've given the same tour I don't know how many times, and you still have to believe that those stories are cool and fun and that kind of thing. And there's the business end of record keeping, but then there's also, you know, I write books for a living, and my husband and I, we still have day jobs. Mm-hmm. Because it's not that we don't commit to it, because we do, but the tourism just isn't there to make it a full-time commitment.
What do you get out of doing it then? I mean, as you say, it sounds like a lot of activity.
Well, I mean, from a personal level, you know, I've been writing ever since I was 13 years old, and I love writing books.
Mm-hmm.
I've done some academic things, and I've done the history of Central State, and I've done my ghost books. I'm currently working on a book about Dr. Kanabe.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I get the satisfaction of writing, because that's one of my passions. But then we get to meet all sorts of wonderful people, and we get to investigate the most marvelous places, and we're both totally into history, so we get to learn the history of all these places and get to see them. And, you know, some of these places people can visit and some of them people can't, usually. So it's pretty cool.
What's the place that surprised you the most?
There's been a lot of surprises.
Well, for me, probably it was one actually that was out of state, when we went to Bardstown, Kentucky, where I had a pretty intense experience at the old Jailer's Inn bed and breakfast there, where I, in the middle of the night, twice woke up two nights in a row feeling like somebody's trying to really tell me how it felt like to be a prisoner there in the late 1700s, early 1800s, when this prison was built. And it's now a bed and breakfast, and you sleep in the same rooms where the prisoners used to be. So it's a little intense, and that was definitely very surprising to me how intense it was for me.
How did you sense that the you know, that the message was coming?
Yeah, you're not getting out of this.
I don't normally sense very much with the paranormal. My wife is a bit more gifted like that, but yeah, it was just in the middle of the night waking up, experiencing that, feeling that.
We are talking about historic Indiana hauntings here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Nicole and Michael Kabrowski of Historic Indiana Ghost Walks and Tours. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about historic Indiana hauntings today on No Limits. My guests are Nicole and Michael Kabrowski of Historic Indiana Ghost Walks and Tours and unseenpress.com. Well, we've gotten a question from a listener who did not want to go on the air. It says, why is it that ghosts only seem to come out at night? And I guess I'll frame that, or do they? Michael's shaking his head. Now, I'll say this. Radio is not a real visual medium. We have to talk here. We have to talk, okay? So,
I was letting my wife go ahead.
Okay. I have no problem with this question. Okay. I don't believe that they just come out at night. I think, you know, and I know some people are going to be offended by what I'm about ready to say, but I think that the media on television, all of the ghost shows, have made it seem like they only come out at night, you know, going dark and all of that. Yeah, it's great at night to be super scared and all of that. But I, for every one that I have that comes out at night, I've had people give me experiences of what happens during the day. I had a paranormal experience at my house today, and it was morning. It wasn't dark. You know, some of the buildings that we go to, they have paranormal experiences, you know, during the day. The Athenaeum Fountain, they had one during the day. They actually saw a ghost right outside their window. It wasn't somebody that was working outside their window. Nobody was working on the building. It actually walked along the side of the building, and several people saw it in different rooms. You know, I heard my name called in the house today. It said, you know, Nicole, you need to do this. And it came from the room where I have a lot of my historic research. And, you know, I don't know who it was. It wasn't him. Nobody else was in the house. I don't think that they always come out at night. I think that's kind of perpetuated by scary movies and scary TV shows. But it is fun to go dark. It gives a little bit of extra ambiance to it.
We are talking about historic Indiana hauntings here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Christy, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I do believe in ghosts, and I do believe in the different hauntings because I've had a few experiences myself. One experience was, it was not long after my husband had passed. I was sitting in the house, and I was sitting at a table doing a puzzle, and all of a sudden I felt this brush against the back of my neck, and I just disregarded it, and then I felt it again, and I looked around, and there wasn't anybody, and I am convinced that it was him. And also in the house, in the utility room, I would have all my pots and pans, and I would every once in a while sound like they were crashing on the floor, and I'd go in there, and there wouldn't be anything. So I believe in that thoroughly. And my question to you is, what is the location in Indiana that has the most hauntings and sightings?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Christy.
Yeah. We get those questions very often. What is the most haunted location or most haunted city? But it's really hard to tell because there are so many different locations with so many people that come through and lived there or died, which can contribute to that. So it's really hard to pinpoint one. Our experiences, we have a lot of experiences at the Athenaeum. We been visiting the Central State Hospital grounds, which are very popular and have a lot of experiences out there, Nicole?
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, everybody seems to say, well, this is the most haunted place here or there or whatever. You know, I think it's what you believe in and how much you believe of that place that makes it the most haunted for anybody. People believe that the Slippery Noodle is one of the most haunted places. I agree. There's a lot going on there. You mentioned the Athenaeum and Central State. Those are, you know, like the holy grails of Indianapolis. You know, the City Market has their underground piece, and some people believe that that's really haunted. But I can't pick one spot, not even, you know, like on our tours, I can't pick just one spot that's the most haunted.
Well, and since it sounds like by definition most of these stories are grounded in history and grounded at some level in tragedy, what's the saddest story you've encountered along the way? I mean, the one that just, oh, man.
for me, it's anything dealing with children, but also, you know, I'm obsessed with Dr. Kanabe, so her story was very tragic because she was only 35 years old. She'd attained the dream that she'd had right ever since she was a child of becoming a doctor, and she had been so groundbreaking in Indiana, and now, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, she's killed very tragically. And
how was she killed?
Her throat was cut by a sheep's cut, which basically was meant to minimize the spatter.
Mm-hmm.
And she was cut once one way and then cut once the other way. She had a few defensive wounds, and they believed, you know, there were several people that came forward. They indicted a couple guys that were later acquitted. They tried to say she'd committed suicide, you know, that she had the wherewithal to cut one side of her neck and then cut the other because she was a frustrated old maid or a lesbian, any number of things, and, you know, disappointed in love. And it was just very, very badly handled.
Michael, what's the saddest?
Well, one story that we talked about in the past on our bus tour was, of course, in Indianapolis when we went by the home where Sylvia Likens had her suffering, and she just recently was the anniversary, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And after they all moved out, the house stood empty for many years, and people, of course, did the bad thing and did trespassing, which you're not supposed to do. Don't do anything illegal. That's what we always say. And a lot of people had experiences there that there are hauntings in that space. Now it's a parking lot, so we don't know if it's still going on there.
Mm-hmm. We've gotten a question via Twitter, and if you'd like to reach out to us via Twitter, you can find us at WFYI from Travis, who says, do you have any info on the Schnull Rausch House?
Oh, wow.
At 30th and Meridian. I had a sighting there 15 years ago.
I had a sighting there 25 years ago, okay. And I'm actually going to be back there on Saturday for a party. And when I went there, they were renting the house out for different events, and I was there for a Christmas party, and my ex-husband and I went up to the third floor. The lights started to flicker. I mean, it's an old house, but the lights started to flicker. They finally went off. We were playing with the light switch. It didn't turn back on, and then we saw a maid on the upper floor. We weren't supposed to be up there, but we were anyway. And we saw a maid on the third floor.
We are talking about historic Indiana hauntings here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hi, I'm really excited to hear this conversation. I used to do investigating when I was in college. I had my own little group in southwestern Virginia, so I was really interested to see how I could maybe, you know, get involved with the group that you have there as far as the tours and everything.
Well, we normally we have a business, so we don't really have a group that does a lot of investigations with many people. We do some public ones that we have listed on our Facebook page and our website where we go to places as a fundraiser and do overnight investigations there for a group of people. Depending on the size of the space, we go to the Noblesville Jail sometimes, the old historic jail. And there are a lot of groups around here, though, when you search the internet or Facebook that are available for hobby groups to go out and investigate, so you can find a lot of them online.
If Matt, though, wanted to take a tour or become part of it, how would he get in touch with you?
Yeah, he can find us on our website, unseenpress.com, And also on Facebook, Unseen Press or Historic Indiana Ghost Walks. When you search those, you should find us on the usual search engines, and you can make reservations there. We have them year-round, although if the winter is like last winter, we probably don't have too many in January and December, but we do them year-round.
We've gotten an email question or story from a listener named Brianna, and if you'd like to reach out to us via email, you can do so by sending it to nolimits@wfyi.org. Brianna says, my ghostly encounter took place at an old house from the early 1900s. We were downstairs and heard what sounded like the dresser on the far end of the upstairs hallway move incredibly loudly and swiftly across the hall. It then moved back, then stopped in the middle of the hall right above our heads. We were the only two in the entire house. I've had my own personal experiences like this one in the house. Later discovered it was an old nursing home hospice, undeniably haunted.
Nice. There are a lot of, you know, again, with tragedy or, I mean, I'm sure that there were quite a few people that went through there and passed away. Tragedy, very tragic place, but obviously somebody wanted to get a hold of her attention.
Now, how much of this is also, you know, there are places that you can go and we'll speak almost of haunted as almost a metaphor or whatever, but because the sense of the history there is so palpable. You know, you go to a concentration camp in Germany or one of the Civil War battlefields here in the United States, places where, you know, large-scale tragedies occurred. Even I, and as I've expressed some of my skepticism, you know, and you stand there and you can just feel that palpable sense of sadness. I wouldn't say in those cases that that someone or something is trying to talk to me, but you can feel, you know, okay, something bad did happen here and all of that. Is that a sense of, would you call that a paranormal experience too, or is that?
Well, that's a really good question. For me, I wouldn't define it as a paranormal because you're kind of feeling. It's not like you're seeing it or you're measuring it in some way. But I understand. I mean, I go to places and I feel that way. We went to Chancellorsville this summer, and we felt that there. We've gone to the Scottsburg County Farm here in Indiana before. We're actually going back in a couple weeks to spend the night there. But the county farms were not, you know, the poor houses were just not, you know, a good place to be. And there's just a big, big sadness when you walk in for all the cheeriness that's in there now. It's just palpable.
We are talking about historic Indiana hauntings here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Joel, welcome to the program.
Hi. I have a question. I've experienced a lot of, as you mentioned before, the sort of palpable sadness of a place, and I've feel like I've had these experiences with the dead and ghosts and apparitions and such, but I've only come to realize that they were nothing but figments of my imagination, that I would have these feelings and then they would be completely unraveled by, you know, hard evidence that I would come across my own. And you feel like there are obviously people that have these video footage and stuff like that, but you, like, how many people do you think experience this kind of, I had this experience, however I was mistaken, and can you kind of filter those from the ones that are ones that can make a tour, one that's just like such a good story that you just have to retell it?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Joel. Cool.
Yeah, there have been times, I actually have a couple stories here. One's really short. I want everything to be paranormal. And even in my own house, I was picking up orbs on my cell phone one day. And I started speaking because I'm not a huge fan of orbs, but there were so many of them, and I truly did not feel like that they were dust or something, that I started talking and saying, if there's somebody here, you know, please communicate with us. And I was recording. I was trying to get an EVP, and my son, who's in the military, was behind me, and he's like, Mom, it's dust. It's dust. And I'm like, no, it's not. No, it's not. So I ended up, he goes, I'm going to get my phone out. You get your phone out. And they were blue. And so we started taking pictures, and he proved to me that they were really just dust. So that was kind of horrible, especially with your 22-year-old. But on our tour in Westfield, we have a ghost named Hank, and he was supposed to haunt this old building, this old bank. And sometimes, you know, people will give us pictures, or they'll show us on their viewfinder on the cameras that, I got a ghost. And I never, ever trust that, because it can always be something else, you know. And I'm a little older, and my eyes aren't what they used to be. You know, I have to take my glasses off and everything. And I said, you need to take it home. You need to have a look at it, because she swore she got a really good apparition of him. And it did look like that. But when she got it home and she sent it to me, it was actually a pattern of flowers in a picture in the building.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
How much of that that kind of conversation do you find frustrating? I mean, in the sense that, and again, I do not want to disparage or offend anyone by making this comparison, but in some ways the parallels with religious faith are there too, that it, by definition, it's something that can't be proved or disproved, you know, because it's something you have to take on faith. You either believe it or you don't. Is that a fair comparison? Michael, you were sort of tilting your head back and forth.
Yeah, we kind of try to stay away from religion during our tours and our other things we do. We say everybody can have their own beliefs, and it's good, and we encourage that. But we try to kind of make those comparisons. But like the previous caller, one of the previous callers said about having experience with a loved one that passed away and then visiting, we have so many stories of people that have experiences either in the same spot that experience the same thing, people that don't know each other, and they tell us the stories, or we hear them from other people, and also loved ones moving on, and then their children or grandchildren getting a visit from them. They don't know they have passed away, and everybody compares times later, and it was just after they passed, they got a visit, or a radio came on, or something like that. So we always look at evidence and try to find what else it could be, of course. That's very important, and especially as so many people talk to us and have experiences and tell us about them. But it's amazing how many people have stories that really they can't explain any other way.
We've gotten a question from a listener named Michelle via Twitter, and you can find us on Twitter, at WFYI. What are your experiences in Irvington, one of the older sections of the city?
Nice. Irvington is a really great place. We honestly, that's one area of the city that we haven't done a lot of investigation in. I know that, you know, they have a Halloween festival there, and they've got, you know, a tour that's associated with that. But we haven't done any investigation there, but we've heard a lot of stories about the area. And, you know, it's a really old area, and there's some pretty significant things in Indianapolis's history that happened there. I mean, they've got the D.C. Stevenson House, they've got the Raggedy Andy, the creator of the Raggedy Andy and Ann dolls, his house there, and so much more. And I truly believe that they're, you know, they've got theaters there. I truly believe that, you know, there has to be a lot of spirits there.
We are talking about historic Indiana hauntings here on No Limits today in anticipation of Halloween tomorrow. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about historic Indiana hauntings with Halloween just around the corner. My guests are Nicole and Michael Kabrowski of Historic Indiana Ghost Walks and Tours and UnseenPress.com. They're tour leaders, phenomenon investigators, and authors of several books on regional hauntings and a history of Central State Hospital. Richard, welcome to the program.
Yes, yes, okay. I was curious, so when I was growing up, I went to camp in Brown County, and there were a lot of folklore and a lot of stories, and even one about a Brown County monster. Do you have any tours or any further information on Brown County about ghosts down that way?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Richard.
We do not currently have a tour in Brown County. Brown County is absolutely beautiful. I've never heard of the Brown County monster, but I do have a couple of stories from down there. My husband and I stayed in the 1875 Inn a few years ago, and we picked it because it was nice and not necessarily secluded, but it was at least away from everything, and it was kind of, you know, unplug yourself for the entire weekend. And we stayed in one of the rooms that had a beautiful four-poster bed, and it was just, it was a beautiful experience, and we ended up waking up, and we heard some things falling off the shelves. And like many people, you know, we heard it hit the carpet, but there was nothing on the carpet when we went and we had a look. We also felt the bed shake a few times, and we started looking through the guest book, and other people had had similar experiences there. You know, there's no train tracks nearby. It's not like a fan had kicked on or anything like that, so I was waiting for it to levitate, but also in Brown County, I actually went to Camp Rancho Formosa when I was a child, and went there for camp. It was a CYO camp at the time, and we didn't have a monster, but there was, you know, this might be more legend than ghost stories, but the girls that I was with, you know, there were younger kids there, and I was kind of standing off in the background, and they were telling some of the younger campers that, you know, there was a woman that walked the creek, and if you stayed out there too late, that, you know, you would see her. And I stayed out there to see if I could find her. I never saw her, but she was supposed to be the shimmering woman in the creek.
We've gotten a question from a listener named Jim who says, as long as humanity has been on this planet, we have always had folks who claim to have seen ghosts, but we have never had solid scientific evidence of ghostly existence. At this point in our development as a species, with the scientific advancements that we've had and have, and no proven ghost evidence, how can we believe that ghosts are real?
Well, and again, I think some people are going to be a little upset with what I say here, but how do you believe anything that's on faith, whether it's God or whether it's the paranormal? You know, there are staunch believers in God, yet they have yet to see him or her. And as far as I'm concerned, everything, including what Michael and I do, is considered a pseudoscience, because right now, you know, you have parapsychologists, but that's more like for ESP and telekinesis and that kind of thing. But no scientist is going to put their neck out there right now and say, yeah, I'm going to go look for ghosts. Everything that we're using, from, you know, digital voice recorders and cameras and EMF detectors and all of that, none of that has been validated by science as a proven method to go measure a ghost. You know, based on what we have to work with, that's how we justify ourselves in saying that something is haunted.
Got a question also from Morgan, a listener named Morgan. How would you investigate in your home without inviting nefarious entities? I live in a very old building and have heard stories about strange things happening.
That kind of plays with your spirituality, because if I do an investigation in my home, some people say a prayer before they go do something like this. Some people believe that, you know, if they sage the house before and after, that they're not going to have any bad entities or anybody sticking behind or anything like that. But it really follows your belief system. And when Michael and I investigate, we have a very common sense method. If it's happening to you, you need to be the one investigator, or at least you need to be there and an active part of it. And you need to, you know, if you want to say, for lack of a better term, you know, protect yourself from, you know, negative energy or entities or whatever you want to call it, then you need to find a trigger mechanism in your belief system, whether it's prayer, sage, or something else.
We are talking about historic Indiana hauntings here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Sid, welcome to the program. Sid, you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. What's on your mind?
Well, I had, I guess, a comment and a question. I used to work at a historic theater, a community theater that had a number of paranormal investigators come through through the years, always, you know, each different group finding pretty much the exact same things, which kind of, you know, made me an instant believer, just based on the fact that they weren't talking to each other and finding the same types of hauntings and paranormal events. But then once we had a group come through that was, I guess, less than reputable hunters, and a number of them were drinking heavily. Some of them smelled, I guess, like drugs. And I was wondering what thoughts or comments you had on what that does to the experience, as well as, I guess, the spirits. Any reaction to that type of environment?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Sid.
Yeah.
It's a very important point to us that we always treat both the location and the owner and also possible spirits with a lot of respect. And we really want to treat people, even if they passed on, like people. And being drunk or on drugs is really not respectful to anybody. And we definitely always say that that's an off. If anybody, even on our tours, comes along and is drunk, we can kick him off. I mean, it's our tour. It's a very important point also for owners of historic places and theaters, and many, many theaters are haunted here in Indianapolis and all over Indiana, that they maybe have a quick look at the people they're inviting and see what they're doing, maybe check their Facebook page or their websites, if they're a group that have a website, to make sure that they go only where they have permission, that they don't do illegal stuff.
Ask for references. I mean, I know that it's harder when it's a public sort of thing, but if you're going to do anything private, and that goes for anybody who's going to have, you know, paranormal investigators in their home or business, period, you know, ask for references. If they can't provide you with solid references that you trust, then you need to question, you know, whether or not they should be there.
We've gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Mary Jane, and if you want to reach out to us on Facebook, you can do it at No Limits WFYI. She says, in Wabash, Indiana, my husband and I were looking at a beautiful farmhouse with our realtor. Neither one of us was interested in buying the house. On the way home, we both described a sickening heaviness that made us want to leave as soon as we'd entered. My husband to this day does not believe in ghosts or anything supernatural, but I cannot explain the feeling of dread. I wish I had the address of the house to look up the history. What might have caused this?
Well, Michael and I have had a similar experience in an old antique mall. It's no longer there anymore, but it was in an old four-square house, and we went around the whole building, and we left, and Michael said, you can't make me go in there anymore. I'm not coming back. You can't make me. And I said, well, what happened to you? And he described the same thing that happened to me. We were in the area that would have been the kitchen, and we both got this feeling of dread, and it just got worse as we went upstairs and we went into the room, the bedroom that was up above it. We don't know the history behind the house. We've tried to find history behind the house and can't find enough of it. But we both had the same feeling of dread, like there was something very unwholesome or murder or rape or something that very, very like stomach turning that happened in that room. And what could have caused it? What could have caused yours? You know, I can't say that it was paranormal, but, you know, people who are sensitive that go into places and pick up on feelings, it could have been the start of someone or something trying to get your attention. It could have just been, you know, it could have been a warning from one of your relatives, don't buy this house because you're not going to be happy here. It could have been a lot of things.
We are talking about historic Indiana hauntings here on No Limits. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, I'm Michael from Indianapolis. Back, probably like 2007, I was hiking in the woods with a friend, and we came out of the woods onto a road that had a big stone railroad track that was going over. Like, it was a big stone bridge with a railroad track on it. And we thought we'd climb up there and watch the trains go by. And on the way up in the archways of this stone bridge, I could have sworn that I saw a man standing there. That, of course, made me hurry up to the top as quickly as possible and made me pretty uncomfortable for the rest of the night. This was located in Avon, and so shortly after that, I kind of did some research on the bridge, and I read that there was a kind of a history of hauntings on that bridge, and I was wondering if you guys could talk at all about a haunted bridge, haunted railroad bridge located in Avon.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Michael.
Well, there are a lot of stories about the bridge. I've heard everything from, you know, there was a cemetery on top of it to, you know, somebody with a lantern stands underneath or on top or what have you. But and then there's a couple of other bridges where the stories get kind of convoluted. But if I remember correctly, this was the one where the worker was supposedly either killed there or buried inside one of the pilings or something along those lines.
Now, Mike, this is my question. In those cases, when you do find out sort of the background on that feeling, does it intensify the experience when you're there, or, you know, in some ways alleviate it?
For me, I'm not somebody who likes a lot of surprises, so I like to be informed, and yeah. I try not to let it influence my thinking. Michael?
For me, it does definitely, just because we love history so much anyway, to find out new tidbits of history about places is always kind of exciting for us anyway. And then if there are hauntings there that relate to it, that really makes it special to us, and we definitely like those places the most.
Yeah, there's a place in Westfield that, again, with Hank, the ghost, he's believed to have turned up the heat in this building, among other things. And when we were talking with some of the older people in Westfield, long before any of this was made public, mm-hmm. they were like, oh, he used to make his landlord so unhappy because he used to turn the heat up so high. And we're like, what? We couldn't believe that it just dovetailed so nicely together.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Randall who says, if someone has a haunting, is there a way to disinvite a spirit away from your home if the spirit doesn't seem too pleasant?
Again, that's always, like we say, it's your own belief system and you need to do what you're comfortable with. We can give recommendations. We normally use sage ourselves to clean energy off or get the spirits out that we maybe don't want to have around anymore. But it depends what your belief system is. If you're religious, go to your religious organization and see what they can do, or invite somebody over who can, you know very well, who can do that for you, with you, always with you would be best.
Well, and for example, my daughter had her great-grandmother's items that she brought in the house after she died, and the great-grandmother didn't like me ever. So mm-hmm. I said, you really don't need to be in my house, because she did a couple mean things. She turned the burner of my stove on a couple times, and we went on vacation, and I said, you know, you need to leave. Mm-hmm. I just talked to her as a person. I said, you need to leave, because if you're not gone when I get back, then, you know, I'm gonna get out the sage, and you're going to leave anyway. Mm-hmm. So she did.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about historic Indiana hauntings here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I was just wondering what theaters, if any, in central Indiana are haunted or have something living in it.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Jeff.
Uh-huh.
Well, what theater doesn't seem to have a spirit? It's not a respectable theater if it doesn't have a spirit in it. Theater on the Square, in my hometown of Anderson, I mean, the State and the Riviera, which is no longer there, and then the Paramount Theaters, they all have something going on. The IRT here in Indianapolis.
The Murat.
The Murat, yeah. I mean, they're just the Crump, the Art Craft. There's just tons of them that have spirits in them.
I sometimes have the theory that because of all the artistic people there have a lot of energy and do so much volunteering that it helps with the ghosts, too.
Diane, welcome to the program.
Hello. I don't know if this fits in with your program or not, but I've had two serious surgeries, and at both of them, my mother was in the room, in the surgery room. One time she was far away, another time she was right there holding my hand. What is that? Is that a...
And I presume your mother is no longer living, right?
No. She died before both of the surgeries.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for the call. I'll see if we can get an answer.
Okay.
You know, for me, I consider that kind of a paranormal thing because, you know, a lot of nurses that work in areas where, you know, patients are terminally ill or even ones that they know are going to die, I mean, they call it kind of circling the drain. And there have been numerous nurses, and I'm just using them as the example, who have said, you know, I saw somebody go in this person's room, but then when I went in there, there wasn't anybody there. Or they say, you know, the people are talking to their family members when there's nobody in the room. I had one nurse tell me in a hospital in eastern Indiana that she saw somebody go in the room. She went in. There wasn't anybody there. The person was talking. But then she went back to her station, and she saw the person that was in the bed walk out hand in hand with somebody, and the two figures went down the hallway and disappeared. And, of course, she ran in to see the patient, and the patient has passed.
We've got time just for one last question. We're getting close here, so I think it's appropriate given the time of year. I mean, how do the two of you mark Halloween? What do you do? What do you do?
We give tours.
You give tours? Okay, where's the tour tomorrow night then?
We have one tour in Westfield. That's the Westfield Underground Railroad tour. And then, Michael, you've got a tour downtown.
Yeah, the Chilling Chatham Arch Lockerbie Ghost Walk. We have that one downtown as well, which is almost sold out, but we have a few spots left.
Mm-hmm. And so Halloween's really not a holiday for you folks then. It's a busman's holiday as it is, right?
Pretty much.
Pretty much, it's fun.
Well, I think that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Nicole and Michael Kabrowski of Historic Indiana Ghost Walks and Tours. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very much.
Also, like to thank all of our listeners who called in and asked great questions. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Have a great Halloween. Thank you for joining us.
Is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.